chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the martyr walk, the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? In the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming. How are you doing on this sultry, hot day? Lark's weighing in. She's saying, yeah, why is it so hot? Why is Obama making us suffer in this heat? Anyway, you know, that was a joke on Facebook today, you know, since everything's Obama's fault. No. I do hope you've had a good weekend, found some nice ways to be cool, enjoy the unfolding summer produce. We already have local melons, which is really early, and I had my first local cantaloupe from Beet Generation Farm, and it was really good, really, really fragrant. I mean, so much more fragrant than anything you can get in a supermarket. Every time I open the refrigerator, just this halo of cantaloupe aroma engulfed me. And we have lots of aromas here in the studio tonight. This is something I can't believe. You've never been on before, have you?
Were you
a long time? No,
it's been a long. I think it's been like 10 years ago.
No,
like
20.
I was a child.
Or yes. 18. Yeah. Yeah. It is Greg Henson of O Olive Oil. And we met, so I met a couple of other people this way, at a check-in counter of a hotel in the south of France.
It's true. Wow, good memory. Yeah.
And you told me we were on a trip with about 38 people who we were visiting olive oil mills primarily, and you told me you were starting an olive oil company in Sonoma, Napa. I forget what you said at the time.
I was in San Rafael at the time.
San Rafael, okay. Yeah. And I just thought, oh God, someone else. And I thought I so naively thought the field was already too crowded. I was so wrong.
Yeah, you crushed me before I knew what crushed meant.
So. Oh, I didn't discourage you, did I?
No, I said I was going to crush organic Meyer lemons and with olives. That, and you said, oh my goodness, most lemon oils I've tasted taste like Lemon Pledge.
Yes,
and
that's
right.
That's exactly what I said.
But, you know, I said mine is going to be completely different because we're actually using real fruit. Mm-hmm. So that's how we started.
And you did, and it's fabulous, and I see it right over there. You have not changed you haven't changed the label.
No,
the label is so fabulous. It's got this elongated, I think it could be an elongated lemon. I have always thought of it as an elongated green olive.
And it is a morph between those two designs. Okay. It actually is kind of a composite of a lemon and an olive. Uh-huh. But you probably hit it closer.
It's just a classic image, and it's one of my favorite images.
Thank you.
And since this has come out, do you even know how many products that you have now?
That is a
There's
tough
a
question.
Lot.
I'm going to say 26.
26?
Yes. And we just, you know, I love all my babies, but sometimes you have to choose.
Sure.
So we've had to drop a few so we could add a few. So, you know, we all change and consumer tastes change as well. But there's still classics that I won't let go of.
Good, good. Yeah. Now, you did a lime oil for a while, didn't you?
We still have it, Tahitian lime. Yay.
Because I really loved that one. And did you do grapefruit for a bit?
We
didn't
did.
You got rid of it.
That one, I know. You know,
I love that one.
You love that, and all the really high-end chefs love that one. Mm-hmm. So there were about, you know, 45 people in the United States that adored that product. Nobody else knew how to use it, or they were frightened by it because of the whole Lipitor scare, like you can't have grapefruit. We were like, this is not grapefruit juice. It was grapefruit rind oil.
Right.
But it was one of the most beautiful oils.
It's just gorgeous, gorgeous,
and we won
gorgeous.
A Savior Magazine Award Product of the Year with it. I mean, it won a lot of awards, but consumers just could not understand how to use it.
Well, maybe there's going to be a time again for it.
I would love to bring that one back. Cause
how did you make that one?
It was just like we make our other ones. Mm-hmm. It's a Mission Olive, and very low tech. We just crushed organic ruby grapefruits.
Oh, you did ruby.
Ruby grapefruit. Mm-hmm. And it was just that beautiful blush, fragrant. We served it at a big party at MoMA one year, and we just put it on crostinis with a little bit of goat cheese. And it was beautiful. It was really good.
Yeah, it's fabulous. So you started out, let's go back to the beginning. You started out with O, and it was just called O, and it was with the Meyer lemon. What year did you release it?
96 was our first fancy food show at Moscone Center in San Francisco. And we made, I think, almost 40 to 50 gallons, which is kind of hysterical now. It was such a small amount. Mm-hmm. And we showed it. I drove into the San Francisco, and at the time, there was this popular restaurant called Rose Pistola in North Beach. So Reed Herron and Scott Warner, who was the executive chef at the time, just fell in love with it and said, we'll buy everything. And I was so giddy. I was like, okay. And then we had no olive oil for the whole year.
Yeah.
So the next year, we had enough to go to New York, and then we won Outstanding New Products. So, and again, that was really almost like a beginner's luck moment. We knew it was a special product, but one of the first people that showed up in New York that first day was Giorgio De Luca from Dean & De Luca, and he just went crazy for it. And that was kind of our big New York moment. We won the Sophie Award, which is kind of like the Academy Awards for fancy food in New York.
You also got pretty early on the attention of Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey came a little bit, I want to say like 2 or 3 years later, but yes. And to that point this year, we were her surprise birthday gift. So her executive chef called us and said, I want to surprise Miss Winfrey. She's an olive oil fanatic. And this year, we're going to send her your jalapeno lime oil as her surprise olive oil gift, because she's seen it all, tried it all, and you're still one of her favorites. So that was kind of cool.
That's great.
Yeah,
such fun. How do I get my oil and vinegar book to her? Love it. She fell in love with that.
I've got her home address.
Right on.
Yeah.
We'll talk later.
Yeah.
So, and the rest, in a way, the rest is history. You've just been growing ever since.
Yeah, the Meyer lemon was first, and we came out the next year with Blood Orange, and at the time, I mean, everything seems so old school now, but at the time, nobody was doing that, and nobody was crushing Blood Oranges at the time. And again, Scott Warner and Rose Pistola just went crazy, and he said, I've got to put this on a roasted beet salad, and so we had big antipasta platters of the Blood Orange with roasted red and yellow beets, and then he also had like an ensalada ricotta cheese, and it was just beautiful. So when you walked in, there was two platters. One was our Meyer lemon olive oil with house-cured sardines, and the other one was the roasted beet salad. So that was really exciting.
Now, are they still good customers?
Scott is at Bistro Giovanni now in Napa.
Oh, he is, okay.
So I don't know what's happened to Reed, but a lot of those, and I'm very old, dating myself here, but a lot of those 80s chefs in San Francisco have spun out into other locations, and a lot of them are still customers.
Yeah, and I have no idea where Reed Herron is. It's been years
I have
since
no
I heard
idea.
About him.
But out of that same kind of time period, Michael Mina was working at Aqua, and George Maroney was working there. And Michael Mina is still a huge advocate, huge fan, big customer. And anytime he opens a new restaurant, we're on his menu. And so that's exciting.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
So, yeah, it started with Meyer Lemon and then Blood Orange. And what was exciting at that time was that when we started harvesting Meyer lemons, there was such a small crop of organic Meyer lemons. So the original person, he's a farmer up in Orland, and his name is Rich Johansson, and we kind of grew together. So I couldn't find enough organic Meyer lemons, and he was just kind of starting out, and he said, oh my goodness, if you'll buy them, I'll grow them. So at the time, he probably had 50 to 100 trees, and I bought his entire crop.
Wow.
And now he's up to, you know, a couple of thousand trees.
So you're making a lot.
We are making a lot of Meyer lemon olive oil.
And where do you produce?
We produce at a couple of different presses. One is called Pacific Sun Press, and they're our strategic partner during the press, and we just rent their facility.
Pacific Sun?
Yes, it's up in Gerber, which is a really small town between Chico and kind of north of Corning. And it's the Flynn family, and Brendan Flynn was the former California Olive Oil Council president. They're a big almond growing family, which is a controversy now. But anyway, they have a press, and they allow us to go in, and they allow me to take over and kind of do small batch production, which is really cool. So we've grown up together as well, and we pretty much tap out their press. We're a huge customer in December and January, which we're still on those oils, the Meyer lemon and the Blood Orange. Those are still, we use Mission olives, which are really old and getting more scarce to find.
Are they? Yeah,
they are. And then we also produce at another place called Caldani Ranch, and that's in Lodi, and they're another sweet family that is just kind of getting started, and we kind of use the same model that we did at Pacific Sun. And so we rent their facilities, and we do small batch crushes according to our specifications. And so we've kind of like grown up together as well.
Are you doing a stone grinding or horizontal decanter?
Horizontal. I used to use stone crush when I was crushing at McAvoy Ranch, and that was fantastic. And if you go to our website, there's still pictures of my two little daughters at McAvoy's with the little stone wheel, and they're tossing Meyer lemons into the wheel.
I think I was at McAvoy once when you were producing.
You probably
because
were.
Because I walked in, and the smell of the olives and the lemons together was so gorgeous.
It's still magical. It is intoxicating, and it's still the magic moment of the whole year when you actually get to crush. My new thing is herb to olive, so we're crushing fresh basil as well. So when we crush, we usually do a batch of 10,000 pounds of basil, which is a lot of basil.
That's a lot of basil.
Yeah, so it takes a lot of basil to get enough basil oil to actually, you know, bond with the olives.
And do you crush them together with the olives or separately?
Together, and that's kind of how we started. Is it takes longer, it's more expensive, but it's that the details are there. And a lot of people try to knock us off and do shortcuts or cheaper. And
there's a lot that is like the chemical equivalent of, say, garlic or whatever.
Yeah, and it just, as you know, food is hard to reproduce a Meyer lemon flavor. It's I think it's impossible. Yeah, I would say impossible. So, you know, it takes still a pound of organic Meyer lemons to go into one of these little 250-ml bottles. And that's a lot of Meyer lemons. So it takes a lot of rind oil to actually bond with the olive.
And do you put in the entire olive? Or do you just do the rind?
I do the entire Meyer lemon.
Okay. So then you have a lot of vegetable water.
Absolutely.
To spin off.
And there's this fine line in it. You know, it's definitely the small batch. It's batch by batch, and that's kind of the tricky fine line. And that's why nobody wants to do it the right way, because you have to really slow things down. You have to really control the batches. And what happens is you can emulsify if you add too many Meyer lemons. So then you actually lose the yield on the oil, and a lot of the oil goes out with the vegetable water.
Right.
So there's that tricky fine line. And the other fine line is that if you over try to super saturate a batch, for example, then it becomes very rindy. So a lot of people try to do shortcuts and like, let's just jam it with a lot of lemons, and then it gets super bitter, super rindy, and then you can't walk back from that. So it's still a very slow, very low-tech process, and that's why I think we're still unique, and a lot of people just are adding flavorings because they just don't want to spend the time. Or
yeah, there's two other producers I know of that are doing the real thing. There's, of course, DeVero.
Yes, Ridgely's been doing it. Yes.
Yeah, and they didn't make much. I think it was this. Was it this vintage? It might have been this vintage. They didn't have a lot of Meyer Lemon oil.
Mm.
And I think it was limited to just, the sales were limited to members of their club.
That would make sense. It's yeah. becoming very costly to make yeah. Meyer Lemon olive oil.
And then Terra Savia.
I don't know that one.
Oh, they're lovely people. Lovely people. And I'll think of their name in a minute. They're in, I believe, Hopland. And they produce wine as well, and they have nice estate. Their oils are estate oils,
cool.
and they do several. And they did a Meyer Lemon Olio Nuovo this year.
Nice, nice.
And it's just wonderful. And they have a full production facility, and that's now where DeVero does their production.
Oh, that's
because
great.
It's the shortest distance between the DeVero orchard and Healdsburg.
That's nice.
Yeah,
yeah,
so,
that's really good.
And they're Yvonne Hall and her lovely husband, whose first name is four letters, and I'm not good. Actually, it's in my olive oil book, so when we take a break, I'll pull that out. They are doing a very, very nice job. They also, I had a glass of their Merlot, and I'm just not a Merlot fan from, the last 15 or 20 years because it's been, you know.
Yeah.
The higher in price, the more tannins they think they have to, you know, just, extract so much tannin. They make a really lovely Merlot, lovely. But they also do a sparkling wine, number of other estate wines. Really great people with a great facility.
And they're in Hopland. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, they're in Hopland. And it's Terra Savia, and there's another Terra Savia, and then there's another name connected to them, and Mike, my whiz engineer, is looking it up right now, and he's going to tell us.
That's funny.
So,
Ridgely and Colleen from DeVero, we used to cross paths when I was crushing at Frantoia Mill in Stone Mill in Mill Valley. And
They're still there.
They're still there. I don't even know if they're making oils.
Yeah, I don't know if they're making oils.
Yeah, we just became too big of a mess for them. So.
Yeah, I mean, Frantoia is an olive oil mill and a restaurant.
Yeah.
And they were milling for a lot of people. And milling is messy.
Milling is messy.
And from October until January,
yeah.
It's a big operation.
It's a big operation. And I think we became just too big of a mess and too much. It was just too much production, and we needed a bigger facility.
Yeah.
So we actually went from there to McAvoy Ranch.
Yeah, and Ridgely went up to Hopland as soon as it became available.
Makes sense, yeah.
Just because, if the olives heat up during the trip,
exactly.
That's not a happy thing.
It is not.
So I want to take a little musical break here. If that's going to be, yes, it looks like. We're going to take a little musical break, and then we're going to talk about how you added vinegar to the mix.
Great.
Thank you.
listening to Mouthful. Music tonight is the Baguette Quartet, a Berkeley ensemble headed by the fabulous Odile Laveau. And I'm not even going to attempt to read that song in this light. We have dim light because it's so hot, but they just played. They either played yesterday or a few days ago for Bastille Day, and they usually play at Chez Panisse on Bastille Day. And speaking of Chez Panisse, you may remember that last week we started a new tradition here on Mouthful. Every week we are going to give away at least one cookbook. It might be a vintage book. It might be a brand new book. It might be something I just want out of my house. But somebody wants it in their house. But tonight we are giving away Fanny at Chez Panisse by Alice Waters. It is a charming little book about Fanny, of course, her only child. And it's about Fanny growing up at Chez Panisse. It's a great book. It's a great book for a child who's interested in food. It was turned into an opera as well. It was performed in at least in San Francisco. It's got wonderful drawings by both... I think Patricia Curtin, who has illustrated a lot of Alice's books. Actually, Patricia helped write it. The illustrations are by Ann Arnold. Anyway, at the end of the show, we will play a final song, and I will give you the number. So it's A Child's Restaurant in Adventures with 46 Recipes, Fanny at Chez Panisse by Alice Waters. And, you know, it's really a treasure. I was going to take it and get some money for myself at the used bookstore, but I thought I'm going to reward a loyal Mouthful listener. I like passing things on in that way. So we are now moving on to vinegar. When did you start? When did you add vinegars for the first time?
1997.
So really close.
Really close. It was the second year, actually the third year after we'd gone to New York, and people were coming up to us and saying, why aren't you doing vinegars? We're like, great question. So we came back, and I knew Greg Riesinger at B.R. Cohn, and they were actually kind of the pioneers of single varietal vinegars. And so I talked to him, and he was really deep into the California Olive Oil Council, and he was really advocating California olives. So I just decided to source some Zinfandel grapes, some old vine grapes in Sonoma County, and we just made a little teeny tiny batch.
So you went directly from grapes.
Yes, we went directly from grapes. Again, we just did small batch. We took it to New York, and we won
Fabulous vinegar.
That's great. You're one of the few that still remembers that vinegar.
Love that. I'm out of it at this point, but I just love it.
It actually got a lot of accolades. Gourmet Magazine gave us an incredible quote saying it was their favorite gourmet vinegar. It's still hard to find on the West Coast because everybody wants the new latest, and which is
Californians, you know, get over
difficult.
That.
But it's still doing well in Boston and the upper, you know, in New England seacoast. They seem to be less trend conscious, and so it's still a beautiful vinegar.
Yeah, I think your Zinfandel and your Cabernet vinegars and B.R. Cohn's Cabernet Sauvignon vinegars are my three favorite red wine vinegars. They're so full and luscious.
Yeah, I love our Cabernet, and it's I guess the feedback loop is that it's doing really well. And again, in New York and Boston, it's hard to find on the West Coast. We have it on our website, but again, it fell into the dustbin of it's not the new trend.
It's not new and hip.
Yeah, so it's still a beautiful vinegar. It's still one of my favorite things is just slice a fresh piece of avocado and just drizzle that with some malt and sea salt, a little cracked pepper.
Yeah.
Super simple.
Have you ever made vinegar eggs?
I have not. I was actually peeking into one of your old cookbooks, and I saw that, and I was
It's in the new version.
It
comes directly from Kermit Lynch.
Oh, okay.
Back in the days of snail mail, I wrote him a letter and asked him if I could put it into the first edition of Oil and Vinegar. And it is one of my favorite meals, especially now at the time, 91, when I wrote that book, we were not getting fabulous farm eggs like we are now.
Right.
So it's gotten even better. But it is so easy. Hmm. You melt some butter.
That sounds delicious.
You crack a couple of eggs in.
That's it.
You add, over light or sunny side up, either way, don't overcook them. And, you know, flip them over, tip them out onto a plate, add a tablespoon of the vinegar and a little nubbin of butter, swirl it and pour it over the egg, salt and pepper.
Ooh, That sounds interesting. That's great.
And, you know, you do this, according to Kermit, you do this as you're drinking a bottle of Beaujolais. And I can say it's a great way to do it.
That helps.
But no, vinegar eggs, it's one of my, and vinegar is such a fabulous flavoring. I mean, of course, it's essential in so many salads, but in other contexts
it's
as
true.
Well.
You know, I peeked into your old salt and pepper book and how salt is essential. For me, vinegar is so essential. I just crave acidity all the time. And so many dishes seem like they don't have enough acid to me, and it drives me crazy.
I agree. I totally agree
with
you.
So I'm usually... We're vinegar nerds, so I think we have 15 vinegars now. So we keep adding, keep subtracting, but I'm obsessed. I love vinegar.
Then, how, if you're obsessed, if you just really love acid, how do you feel about the balsamic vinegars now? Because they seem to have, most of the ones I've tasted, to have a lot less acid.
Yeah, some of them are too sweet for me.
I
think vinegar should have acid. I mean, that's, you need that balance when you're cooking. That's a really good point. And, you know, the counterpoint to that is we came out with this new white balsamic with honey in it, and it's very sweet. So, you know, I'm talking out of both sides of my vinegar mouth here.
But, you know, I think as long as you use it in the right context, I'm not somebody, you know, I think both, neither one of us have that sort of middle American palate that wants almost everything sweet.
Right.
And there's a number of chefs I just want to smack. It's like, I'm coming in your kitchen and I'm taking your sugar away. Get your sugar off the main course. But
yeah, I had a dish the other night and they served crab cakes with a balsamic reduction. I'm just like, oh, I don't want sweet.
Ruins the crab cakes.
I want something savory. I don't want a sweet crab cake. It was just so... Yeah. Seems so 80s or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And you know what I think the best thing for balsamic vinegar is, and I love it in this context, making a sorbet and gelato.
You just hit my sweet spot.
Oh, cool.
That's so funny. Fig balsamic, one of the wildest things I tell people to do is just put it over vanilla bean ice cream. Mm-hmm. And that was my Thanksgiving dessert. And when we were in New York at the Fancy Food Show, we either demo it or tell people about it. And it's amazing how most people don't think
don't
to do that.
But you can also take just a balsamic vinegar and freeze it in an ice cream maker.
That's cool.
What I do, if I want to be really, really ambitious, if I have to do a guest chef appearance or something, which I don't do very often, but I did it at Worth Our Weight, the culinary apprenticeship program.
Cool.
And when my book, Vinaigrettes and Other Dressings, came out. And so for dessert, because I don't have this big sweet tooth, I roasted strawberries with a lot of black pepper, just their own juice. I made balsamic. I did it as a gelato, which means basically a sorbet with a little bit of cream in it, because I thought that was going to tie in really well. So I roasted the strawberries, made the balsamic. I call it gelato Modena. And then I made a chocolate vinaigrette.
Ooh.
And you could actually do that. There is a little tiny company, the Kefery in Sebastopol, and they make water kefirs.
Ooh.
And I can't describe the process.
That's really...
I just can't. But it's... So you have... What you have is something with all of the flavors of chocolate, but the texture of water.
That is...
And as soon as I tasted it, it's like, okay, this could be a great vinaigrette. So what I did was I combined the chocolate with a Sauvignon Blanc vinegar, black pepper, and a whole lot of orange zest. So I'm thinking your new orange, I think it's orange flower water vinegar.
It's orange blossom. Yeah.
Perfect in that. So I just served, I had the strawberries, the hot strawberries, the cold gelato, and then the vinaigrette, which was also cold, was just in a little glass alongside.
Ooh.
And you were supposed to pour it over. Some people drank it as a shot.
That's so cool.
But, you know, those flavors all went together. And for me, that's just, I mean, that's a great way to use balsamic vinegar.
I love it. I love the idea of, like, super sweet ice cream and then this real acid, sour twist on it, and with a little sea salt. You know.
Yes, with a little, absolutely, yeah, with a little sea salt.
On everything, right?
Yes, yes.
But I love your idea of freezing the balsamic and almost making, like, a granita or shave it.
It's you can do it as a, if you don't have... a machine, an ice cream machine, you can do it as a granita.
Ooh.
Which is, if you don't know what a granita is, you just freeze it and say an ice cube tray, the old metal kind, you know, with it, yeah. Take the divider out. You freeze it when it's halfway frozen. You can mix it with a fork. And then freeze it until it's all the way solid and then use an ice cream. That's one way to do it. Or scraping it like you were describing.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, so our balsamic program, I think we switched to all California about 8 years ago. So that was a big mm-hmm. move for us. And it came out of this lawsuit and concern. We started getting phone calls from Southern California about lead in imported balsamics.
Oh, right.
So
right.
That was a big thing. Prop 65 covers that. And so...
And that was lead, that was not in the Aceto Balsamico Tradizionale, was it? It was in the
It was in the lower. I mean the
yeah, the lower priced ones.
The, yeah, the kind of the grocery store balsamics
yeah.
coming in.
Yeah, that are not the true balsamic. They're
exactly.
they're sweetened to mimic.
Exactly.
As you know,
so they use a
yes.
lot of coloring, a lot of sugar,
right.
a lot of things to trick the palate. And so there was just a lot of concern coming out of that, and the Environmental Law Protection, or Environmental Law Fund out of Oakland actually took on 8 of the largest importers, and that case was held up in court for 7 or 8 years, so it was pretty wild. Mm-hmm. So the people that actually flunked that, and the standard in California is 50 parts per million, which is, if you can't meet that threshold, there's something seriously wrong mm-hmm. with your vinegar making. And the ones that didn't meet that threshold actually have to label their product now that says contains lead on it.
How do you get lead in vinegar?
Well, supposedly, you can go to their website, and the transcript on the website, allegedly, is that a lot of it was the Po River Valley, just a lot of acid rain was in the soil, so there was a heavy lead content there. Some of it was alleged that it was the former irrigation equipment. A lot of the equipment from the old days had lead in it, galvanized pipes mm-hmm. and all those kind of things. And then another one was the staves on the barrels were old lead, and they were leaching
oh,
into
they were
the
leaching
barrels.
In. Okay.
So there was like the triple storm yeah. of bad events. But anyway, we're talking about, you know, the kind of the mass distributed balsamic vinegars. Mm-hmm. So that's why we just said, you know, we were super concerned, and we just said, look, we're surrounded by grapes. Let's make our own balsamic here. And everything we've done has been specifically California, so it just made no sense to have this schism, like, let's just be all California and start our own program. Mm-hmm. So we're 8 years into it now. And our fig balsamic, we won a gold award in New York, and that was
for which one?
This one, the fig balsamic.
The fig, okay, yes.
And that was in international competition, and that was really a wild moment to be recognized in New York, and also mm-hmm. with a peer of other industry competitors that make balsamic.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I'm not exactly saving the best for last, but almost, because this was one I didn't know you made, pomegranate champagne. I love pomegranate so much. So let's start our, because we have so much we could taste, and here we are talking.
All right. Let's
taste this one and tell me about how you make that one.
So this one starts with a champagne base.
When you say champagne base, is it champagne grapes or is it?
We start with champagne grapes, and then
okay.
we introduce some other, and we convert okay. that into acetic acid, which is vinegar.
Okay.
So it mm-hmm. becomes a champagne vinegar at that point. Mm-hmm. And then we introduce fresh pomegranate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very just yeah. you know, very simple. So here,
where do you source your pomegranate?
The pomegranates usually come from, we have an organic sourcer out of Berkeley, and he brings them in from Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all California based.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah, we're one of the major producers. How should I taste
how
that?
Do we do this?
Well, you've got the little tasting
little
cups
tasting
we can drink
cups.
From.
We can do that. I'll just pour you a little pour right here. Look at the color. That color is beautiful.
It is gorgeous.
So let me.
And then you were talking, and you have things to do it. While we're doing this, let's talk about shrubs.
Oh, shrubs are super fun. I've got a little piece of bread. Or you want to just sip it? You are vinegar aficionado.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I love that. Again, I'm going back to Thanksgiving. This is my Thanksgiving salad over arugula with some shaved manchego. A little bit of pine nuts, and mm-hmm. that is just gorgeous. And our blood orange olive oil. Blood orange and the pomegranate make this beautiful vinaigrette.
Oh, that's so classically late November.
Yeah, that's so, it is just beautiful, and it's such a great acid counterpoint to all the turkey mm-hmm. and all the...
This is really lovely.
Thank you.
You can really you can tell there's pomegranate there.
That's the key. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just use real ingredients, use real food, mm-hmm. and that's kind of where we're... really adamant about, you know, and passionate about using real ingredients, mm-hmm. real food.
Well, you know, shrubs have suddenly gotten so popular. Yes. And you're going to make me one right now, aren't you?
I am going to.
Because I'm just going to tip this. If you pour sparkling water, I'm going to tip the pomegranate into it.
All right. This is intimidating because you are the queen of shrub recipes.
Oh, no.
No.
There's a woman who works at Shed in Healdsburg.
Oh, yes.
The woman in charge of fermentation. And she's giving her second or third shrub workshop maybe next weekend. So I'm making shrubs at home.
Cool.
You know, I used my old ancient copy of Joy of Cooking to get the basic formula. And then I've just been making my own versions for a number of years.
So my version, I mean, I'm super simple. So it's basically just mineral water, sparkling water. And it's about, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 parts to 1 part vinegar. And
mm-hmm. So you're doing it just with vinegar?
Just vinegar. It's just super simple. We just served this in New York, and you can see how exact my measurements are.
That's one of the things about shrubs. You should not have to measure anything.
Yeah, so I should test that before I try it on you, but see.
No. It's so fine.
Too much vinegar?
Mm-mm. I would want ice. But only because it's a million degrees today.
I know, and it should be chilled.
And that is?
Orange Blossom. That won Best of Class at the Sonoma County Fair last year.
Ah.
So it's a big crowd favorite, and it's just this beautiful, I mean, you can almost, it's drinkable. You could really drink it.
It's lovely. Lovely.
You actually get more of a nose and probably more aroma if you just don't dilute it with water. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
It's really nice diluted with water. And, you know, for a long time, women, 50s, 40s, and probably going back way before that, you know, a lot of women would drink apple cider vinegar diluted with water every morning.
Exactly.
Because it was said to make your tummy flat.
Oh. And now they call that enzyme.
Right. I don't know if it works, but.
No, we have a lot of homeopathic doctors, and it actually, you know, we got calls from Los Angeles. There was a lot of personal trainers and a lot of homeopathic doctors use our citrus champagne as a little tonic or a little spritz before they work out, and it develops enzymes. That's kind of part of that whole South Beach diet, which is very old school. But it kind of gets your metabolism.
It does. It just wakes you up.
Yeah,
I sometimes drink, I'll drink a shrub in hot weather. In cooler weather, I'll drink lemon juice with, ginger,
ooh,
hot sauce, hot water, and honey.
Yeah,
in the morning, and it just wakes you up beautifully.
We have another. I'm showing my little card, a recipe card showing a food writer. This is really scary, but we serve that one in New York as well.
And
it's basically just our citrus champagne with shaved ginger in it and mineral water.
Oh, yeah,
sparkling water. Some people want to add stevia or honey, and I don't like to add sweetness to them. I like them to be on the sour.
We must have similar palates. So one of the things I noticed, a couple of other friends are also making shrubs. And what I've done, and one adds sugar at the time he's making them. And I started out with blueberries. And I just did blueberries. And then I'd made my own spice vinegar. Started out with a good red wine vinegar. I don't remember which one. And added some spices. And a couple of years later, remember I'd done it. And used it to make the blueberry shrub. And I think I just put them in a quart jar and poured some vinegar, filled up the jar with vinegar and left them for a week and strained it. And was fabulous.
And that's how they got started. I mean, I think it was during Prohibition. People would just marinate fresh fruit and vinegar and then strain off the fruit and drink it as kind of a faux cocktail.
And especially if you don't add sugar, it does feel, it's a very grown up drink.
Yeah, it does.
And sometimes I put it into vino verde or an inexpensive sparkling wine. Sometimes I put it in mineral water or still water.
Yeah.
And I don't have, I shouldn't confess this on the air, but why not? I don't have much of a palate for most Chardonnays.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're heavily oaked, and I find you add a shrub.
Oh,
you add shrub,
that's a nice idea.
And some ice to a Chardonnay, and it makes a very nice cocktail.
That's very cool.
And anyway, I just strained my white peach and cardamom shrub.
Ooh,
and I waited 2 weeks for that because I did not want to add sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And it tastes like, it's just beautiful. And I do an 8-ounce glass, probably 3/4 to 7/8 water, and then just the last bit, the shrub, and it's so refreshing.
That sounds
beautiful.
And then
I did Santa Rosa plum with some spices, and I did cucumber, and I'm not happy with how it turned out because I put mint and cilantro in, and the mint made it too sweet for me.
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
I strained it, and I'm gonna put some lime zest and a jalapeno in there and see if that changes
jalapeno
it.
Helps everything, right?
Yes, it does. Anyway, so that was we had orange blossom shrimp. What's so interesting is your vinegars are so flavorful that you don't have to use them to turn them into shrubs. Yeah. They will already function in that way.
Thank you. I mean, I just, this is sippable. And I, you know, one of our other ideas that we tell people, just splash some in a martini. It's pretty amazing. It's so cool. And again, it feels very grown up and interesting.
Mm-hmm. And, the pomegranate, I mean, I'm drinking it out of the cup.
I'm so happy. That's really good.
It's so
that's
good.
Great. It's a beautiful product.
And then you have something new in the world of oil. I think that's why you brought the bread, was that the jalapeno.
I have the jalapeno garlic, and it is my current favorite. Talking about trendy, I'm super trendy right now. This is like my new baby. I love this. We just showed it in New York. We just released it. This is our first year to produce it. Oh, I'm supposed to be crack.
Now, so, what I'm curious about with that one is, well, I want to know how you make it. How do you get the flavor of garlic in there?
Again, it's very old school, super low tech. This time we actually use arbequina, so we didn't use mission olives. And we crushed mostly because we wanted to time the garlic, and we also wanted to time the late harvest jalapenos. We use red jalapenos, which is really rare and difficult to find because they pick them green all the time.
Yeah.
But we really wanted that kind of pre-chipotle profile, that flavor, and that smokier, more complex flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So let me pour a little here. And, oh, you know what? I brought some hummus. Let's try it on hummus. This is like my super snack of the moment as well. Oops, that's really noisy.
Real sounds here on Mouthful. We like them.
Okay, good. Oh, my goodness. All right, so I'm going to drizzle a little bit of the jalapeno garlic on top. I'll put some also in a little cup because you are a purist and you need to taste it just without having the hummus. And then I have some falafel chips somewhere. Where are those? There they
Check out this aroma, Mike.
You can really smell the garlic and the pepper.
You can smell both.
Yeah.
It's really integrated.
So it's interesting how it hits your palate at different times, but it's just, I don't know, it's my new exciting favorite oil. So here's some falafel chips, and I also have some flatbreads from Rustic Bakery if you'd rather do it that way. But
I'm happy.
I love falafel chips and hummus. It just seems like it goes together.
It is a beautiful, beautiful oil. And now let's try it with the hummus.
And now I can't go back to just regular hummus anymore. I have to put this on hummus, which is my new addiction.
I have to make you my hummus sometime.
Yes, this is store-bought hummus. I have to confess here.
But the reason that I say that is with this, I put chipotle.
Mm.
I do a layer of chipotle. I do chipotle powder.
Beautiful.
And cumin in my
two of my favorites.
Hummus. And so that would be, with this.
That would be spectacular.
As the condiment. Oh, that would be so good.
That would just.
You took the chips away.
Oh, excuse me.
We have to give Mike one. I'm certainly not
Goodness,
asking for myself.
I am a horrible host. Let's see this.
So we'll get this to Mike.
All right. So you're good with the falafels. You don't want the flatbreads. All right.
Yeah, this is working fine.
Yeah.
I'm gonna break one in half and share it with the pups. Okay, puppies.
Oh, my goodness. Falafel dogs. I love this. Little puppies.
Okay, I'm gonna break in here and say the olive oil is degraded by the hummus.
Thank you.
It's better just by itself. It's here, wonderful.
Thank you. And here's a little piece of bread, which might be an easier way to try it as well. Just peel off a little.
The oil really is beautiful.
Thank you.
And I am not a fan of garlic olive oil.
I am not either.
It tastes like chemicals.
It does, and most of it is. I mean, very few people are actually doing actual crushed garlic.
So how do you do that?
We actually just crush the olives with the garlic and the jalapenos all at once. We just throw them all in the same batch and run it through, like you say, a horizontal or a mechanical press. Mm-hmm. So they call it a hammer mill. So mm-hmm. it just macerates them together. Mm-hmm. And then it comes out and it sits in kind of a batch, which looks like a tamponade almost, for mm-hmm. about 30 to 45 minutes. And then it goes through a horizontal decanter, and then you get rid of the solids, and then you're just left with the oil and the vegetable water, and then you go through a vertical centrifuge, and then the water is extracted, mm-hmm. and you're left with just the oil. So what you're getting is just kind of the food to food. So you're getting the essential oils from the garlic, and you're getting mm-hmm. the essential oils from the chilies as well. Mm-hmm. So it's three oils coming together. And so kind of the breakdown when the olive goes from a solid to a liquid, it becomes volatile, and that's how they all kind of bond together. Mm-hmm. And so when people are shortening the process or taking shortcuts, they're just adding flavoring, and it never actually bonds together well. It separates, or they're using, like you say, artificial flavorings or, quote, mm-hmm. natural flavorings, which are never like the real food.
Right.
It's just when you use real food, it's such a difference. I mean,
yeah. And then people also at home, you know, they'll crush some garlic and shove it into a bottle of olive oil.
And that's very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Yes, that's very, very dangerous.
If you want to get botulism, yeah. That's a really good way to do it.
My first little course at UC Davis taught me about never do that, because there's a lot of moisture in garlic. So the reason why it's better to crush it is you get rid of the moisture and it actually extrudes out during the centrifuge.
Yeah, you get rid of it. Yeah.
But you're right. I think there was a scare in California late 40s, early 50s, where people got botulism from adding garlic cloves to olive oil.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, at least that's what my professor at UC Davis told me. So I haven't really looked that up, but it was enough to scare people into, like, okay, do this the correct way.
Yeah, do this right. And then, you know, it started, I'm surprised there wasn't, again, in the early 80s when
people were doing that.
It got really popular, and I would read recipes. And
it was frightening, yes.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, some even had you heating it. And which makes it even worse. But because botulism grows in and without oxygen, it needs an anaerobic environment, and olive oil is the perfect environment.
Yeah.
But, you know, time flies when you're having a good time, and we don't have a whole lot of time left. I know. Amazing.
We've got a lot
it?
Of vinegars to taste, though.
We do. So you decide what we're going to taste next, and I'm going to ask you to talk
one.
A little bit about how people in the North Bay, for starters, find your products.
My last thing, let's taste, and this is just back to purity. This is our new organic olive oil.
I
and
love so, that oil. I just took it to a book signing I did.
Oh, I'm very proud of this. It comes from land that's been organic for 16 years, and we're partnering with a family that have been all organic forever, and it's just this beautiful Arbequina. It's got a little bit of Korniki and a little tiny touch of Arbasana in it. And I love oils that are on the fruity, light side, and that's mm-hmm. how we met, going mm-hmm. through the south of France to the Provence region of really fruity, delicate, soft oils.
It's so clean.
It's really clean.
That's the thing I really like. It's lower viscosity, so it doesn't coat your tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a beautiful oil.
Thank you, thank you. It's new, and it's our fun packaging. So
you always have such fun packaging.
I started. I fell in love when I moved to San Francisco. I went to art school, so packaging was part of it, and just my love of art objects, good food, and it all just kind of came together. So we're getting easier to find. It's not.
I know. I see. Well, I see your products all the time.
That's great. We're in the North Bay. We're at Whole Foods in a very small range. The organic olive oils are actually at Safeway now.
Wow.
Raley's is carrying some of our Meyer lemon oil and our fresh basil oil, mm-hmm. which we didn't have a chance to talk about because we're out of time. But again,
well, no, we've got time. You want to taste the basil oil?
Oh, you've got to taste it. It's
okay. Absolutely. No, we've got time. It's just I wanted to shift to talking about availability.
Oh, availability.
But I'll tell you in the
Andronico's, Lunardi's.
But also up here, we have Oliver's. Oliver's has you very well displayed.
Oliver's is great.
Pacific and Pacific / Fiesta.
Palace Market in Point Reyes has
a
really good selection. Petaluma Market, Let's see here. So this is a beautiful oil. Again, I call it my olive to herb moment. We crushed 10,000 pounds of fresh basil. And again, it's not flavored, so it's just a real, you can actually, well, we'll see. Let's see what you think.
Wow. I'll tell you, I hate basil olive oil.
Oh,
I really hate it.
This is a show closer.
It's so artificial.
Yeah.
This is unlike...
Because nobody's using real basil.
Oh,
they're using these...
gorgeous. This might make me actually fall in love with basil
again. Oh, that's good. Yeah, people are using these, quote, natural flavorings, and
they're
just
horrible.
Yeah.
This is gorgeous.
Thank you.
Oh, and the aromas are...
The aroma. It's almost like you want to use it. Just like rub on your skin. It smells so beautiful.
It's really... I mean, it's a complete revelation. They're just like nothing I've ever...
Thank you.
I mean, I would studiously avoid all basil oil just because...
Yeah, I am with you.
I can't stand that artificial flavor.
I know. So we're overcoming that bias.
Isn't that gorgeous?
Yeah, it's the pininess of the basil just pops right out at you.
It's so herbaceous, that's true.
Yeah, and it's...
We need some good burrata cheese or something.
Oh, that would be nice.
That would be lovely, wouldn't
burrata
it?
Burrata cheese and some white Arctic gem peaches.
Ooh, nice. That
Maybe grill them, pour this over. That's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Really, really beautiful.
That means a lot because I know you are tough to please.
I am, and I don't lie.
That's true.
I just smiled. I would just smile politely and ask what we were going to taste next if I didn't like it.
And that's how we started. When I said, yes, I'm going to make a Meyer lemon olive oil, you just looked at me and said, oh, most of them taste like furniture polish. I was like, oh, that's a tough start. But
now you can believe me when I say I love them.
Believe you. I do.
I'm not someone who loves everything, you know, so no, I hope that means that I have some credibility.
You have major credibility. I mean, you're a major foodie. Yes.
That's a sigh of satisfaction. They're just so beautiful. How about order? Now, you're based in Petaluma.
We're based in Petaluma.
That's the offices.
And we...
The warehouse isn't in Petaluma.
The warehouse is in Petaluma as well. So we're getting ready to expand. And hopefully one day we'll have a tasting room where people can come by and taste things, which is the missing piece. Because we're right down the road from Cowgirl Creamery, Barber's Bakery, used to be, and Rustic Bakery's moving to Petaluma as well. So we're going to have this neat little triangle of food providers.
You know, there's a lot of olive oil tasting rooms now. I was down in Half Moon Bay in May. And it was closed, but there was, I mean, Half Moon Bay isn't that big.
That's true.
And there was this huge olive oil tasting room.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, there were like, what are the metal containers that you...
The fustis.
Yeah, fustis. There must have been 3 dozen fustis in there.
Wow, that's amazing.
Then there was another store on the same block where you could also taste olive oils, but they had other things. And then I was just over in Calistoga for a book signing on Friday night, and there was... an olive oil tasting room.
They are
sprouting
up everywhere. It is interesting. The good and the bad is it's creating an awareness and, you know, accessibility. The bad is those fustis are really hard to keep olive oil fresh in because they expose to a lot of air and they oxidize.
Yeah.
And if people aren't knowledgeable, they don't know how to maintain those very well. So we kind of cringe when people call us and order for those projects, and we just tell them, please, 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 you have to rotate the oil. The oil to air surface is really critical.
Yeah, and I would think you would have to have a huge volume.
Yes,
tons and tons of people.
A lot
that
of
to
turnover
work.
For it to work. I agree.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, see how next time I'll see if it's still there next time I go to Half Moon Bay.
So yeah, we're all Sonoma. We age our vinegars in Sonoma. We're Petaluma Bay, so come by and see us.
I definitely will. And then one quick question before I give the phone number to call, if you would like this copy, a hard copy of Fanny at Chez Panisse by Alice Waters. Do you know of a new chain of stores called Oil and Vinegar?
No.
Yes, there are several, and they're starting to add more. They just contacted me about my books.
Oh, great.
So, and I don't know that much about them yet, but we will have to talk about them off the air because...
That'd be great.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We've got oil and vinegar.
seems we have an oil and vinegar thing going on around here. Greg Henson, Olive Oil and Vinegar, thank you so much. It's fabulous to see you.
Great to see you. This has been fun.
And if you would like a copy of this book, be the third caller at 707-584-2020. Start to call as soon as the music begins. Have a winner, Gary Grinnett. Congratulations, you're getting Fanny at Chez Panisse. And I wanted to say Anne, who won French Women Cook last week. You didn't make it on Thursday night to pick up your book, so send me an email if you can at catsmilk@sonic.net, and I will figure out how to get the book to you. And on that note, I'm out of here. Have a great week. Meet me back here next Sunday at 6 for more talk about food, wine, and farming on A Mouthful. Grapes are called.